now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of your favourite LGBT plus magazine show.
This week, Hans will talk to Kerry.
Religious and Pan is one person's story.
Also, the Just Like Us podcast.
Our youth partners who give up their time to go into school tackling homophobia and transphobia are here.
Plus, news, views and a few tracks.
All today, right here on Shout Out, live from the BCFM studios. I know we're running this like back in track for the year because it's celebrating the anniversary of Queer as Folk, but I kind of miss you going dum dum dum.
So do I. I've missed that whole thing. It got me really into the mood, which doesn't make much, but still, like, it really got me, set me up. And plus, I love taking it from you, and now I've got nothing. But I do kind of love this jingle because it's very much like pow.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like big band.
This is the first jingle we used, wasn't it? This was the original backing tune.
When the show started.
Maybe just for me, once or twice, you could bring back the old one.
Yeah, well, when the year runs out, we'll be back to the other one anyway.
Oh, really? So, yeah. It's just for this year?
Yeah.
Oh, is it because Queer as Folk is like 20 years on something this year?
It was indeed.
Made me feel old, why don't you?
1999.
That made you feel old? Not everything else, not the knees, not the back, not the anything else. Just that.
Oh, hello, everyone else. How are you?
Hello.
Hello, how are you doing? How are you dealing with this horrible weather? I know I mention weather all the time, but I actually hate it.
It's been alright today, though.
Has it?
Well, it's a nice autumn day, I think.
Yeah. It has, until it started spitting. And I don't really like it when it's like in between, am I going to get you wet or am I not kind of stage. Because I like to either be, you know, wet, because then I just have to accept it. Or just, you know,
you see, me and the other half couldn't look gayer if we tried when it rains, because we've both got rainbow umbrellas.
Oh, of course you
did. And we'll get out. Well, he bought them, not me.
Of course he did.
But we get out of the car, walk to work, and we walk down the street, and everyone else has got black umbrellas, and like, and there's us with these nice big bright ones.
Well, I think that the rainbow umbrella could be another product that we can include in the gay starter kit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I think it definitely should be in that.
It should be, shouldn't it?
I have my two name in my boot. Or face on it.
I have two rainbow umbrellas in my boot.
See, not just me.
I feel like I haven't had this rite of passage. Maybe it's like an older person thing.
Oh, careful.
No.
I'm joking. I actually really want a rainbow umbrella.
Else we'll kick you out because it's past your bedtime, you know.
Oh, fair enough. Touché.
Can I just say congratulations to WSM Pride, who've been awarded UK Pride 2021.
What does that
mean? Wow. Well, it's the UK Pride. There is each Pride has an opportunity to represent the whole of the UK and Ireland. And for
every year it's a different person.
So it started in London, then it went up north, didn't it?
And it bypassed Bristol, went to, straight to Weston Supermare.
Straight to Weston. And there's a Euro Pride as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, where cities around Europe are chosen for Euro Pride.
Which we can participate in until the 31st of October. Let's not get onto a Brexit one. Anyway, listen, I'm going to cut you short because it's a really packed show.
That was like a penny drop. Damn. Yeah.
We got a really, really packed show today. And we're kicking off. Hans has been talking to Kerry.
Oh, fabulous, Hans.
And have a listen to this.
Tonight I'm interviewing Kerry. She identifies as a pansexual woman who has a Christian faith. There's been a lot of discussion surrounding sexuality and faith, so I want to hear what your experience of being, of coming out, of your faith, and how those two things have come together. So, hello, Kerry.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for talking to me this evening. So my first question is a big one. I'm just wondering what your journey has been like so far, and you know, what coming out has been like for you.
I never really came out. It wasn't like an event, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I did come out to my dad when I was about 18. We were both out drinking. I spent a lot of time in the Rose and Crown in Bridgewater when I was a teenager, which was our unofficially adopted gay bar. And my dad used to come out with us, and then one night after many pints, I said, Dad, I might as well tell you I like girls. And he said, yeah, I know. And I said, well, who told you? And he said, we hang out in a gay bar every weekend. It kind of made sense. I knew you'd tell me when you were ready. And I was like, oh, okay, then let's have another pint. And that was very sort of swiftly dealt with, fine, no issues. But my mum and my stepdad, a lot more conservative than that. And I never really felt like I could tell them because they were very openly homophobic and racist and stuff when I was growing up. So I didn't tell them. And a few years after I moved to Liverpool, I got a phone call one night because my brother had seen a Friends Reunited page that I posted where I'd expressed my sexuality, and he had then shown it to my parents. So they called me and they said, is this true? And I said, yes. And they said, okay, well, I don't know how to talk to you now, with their words, hung the phone up. And then they didn't speak to me for about a year. And then I basically showed up on the doorstep, to say, this is ridiculous, you know. And I walked in, and my mum was lovely with me, but I could see her, the cogs ticking in her brain. Like, she was actively avoiding the situation. You know, if I don't talk about this thing, then it's not real. But my stepdad kind of looked me up and down with disgust and walked out the room. And after about a week of me being home, and I was sort of due to go back to Liverpool, then he did sort of come and sit down with me and said, well, you know, we can't stop you doing what you're going to do, but we're very disappointed we won't get grandchildren.
Right.
Was their response. But that was, I mean, we're talking now about 12 years ago. And since then, they have, you know, over the years, they've sort of softened up, and my stepdad especially is quite inquisitive, so he's not afraid, you know, if he doesn't understand something, he will just ask questions about it, and so they both sort of, they know it's there, but it's not, you know, it's not the elephant in the room anymore, but they also sort of don't necessarily deal with it. Although there was one time, my stepdad gets a lot of his views from his dad, who is the most sort of fascist person I've ever met, if I can say that. And he said one day that he thought all lesbian and gays should be stood against the wall and shot. That's how it would have been dealt with, like, in his day. And my stepdad sort of stood up and said, actually, you know, you've got three granddaughters that are lesbians, and it's disgusting that you speak like that. And my stepdad threw him out of the house. And so that was a massive deal. Because that was bad of accepting, you know, rather than just siding with my granddad, he stood up for me instead. So that was quite kind of special.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And it's a big statement, isn't it? You know, not only is he standing up for you, but he's standing up for you around a subject that was actually quite sort of a complex for him.
Yeah, definitely. Sort of been an interesting journey. But as far as sort of coming out to friends, like coming out in church, it wasn't necessarily an event. You know, I was queer before I was Christian, so I kind of went into it with that mindset. And you know, vast majority of people vast majority of Christians I've ever met are very accepting. Anyway, you know, it's the extreme view that we sort of see a lot of in the media, that like Christian is anti-gay, because that's not been my experience at all of Christianity.
Okay, and going on sort of with that subject, how did you sort of find your faith?
It was quite a long and winding road. I was, my parents, well, so when I talk about my parents, I often mean my mum and my stepdad, because they kind of raised me. My dad, I I was still close to, but we've always had more of a friendship relationship. He wasn't the stern parent for me. But my mum and my stepdad were atheists, and I would, looking back now, I can see the times that God was knocking on my door, because there were a few times that I asked if I could go to Sunday school. I asked if I could go to the Salvation Army, but they were all, you know, no, you're definitely not doing anything like that. You're not listening to this Jesus rubbish kind of thing. But I always felt there was a God, even though I was being told that there wasn't. I always felt it there. And I do remember one of my teachers in primary school, who I absolutely hated. She was a horrible teacher. But she said to me once that there's more evidence that Jesus existed than Napoleon. And for some reason that stuck with me. And, like, you know, 30 years later, it's still very sort of prominent thought in my head. I remember sort of experimenting with Wicca and that kind of thing when I was a teenager.
Tonight I'm interviewing Kerry. She identifies as a pansexual woman who has a Christian faith. There's been a lot of discussions
around that's what happens if you leave that on repeat. And you can hear the second half of that coming up later on in the show. Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Well, I think that's a bit of an ironic track.
Yeah, God won't save you now.
I didn't pick them, by the way. You can totally blame Steph.
That is Steffi's role
well,
there.
Well, if you're already saved, then,
that's
you know.
Exactly.
Is it pronounced Emily?
Amelie. Well, at least I know that now. To be fair. Hey, Hans.
Hey.
How are you, girl?
I'm okay, girl. Are you okay, girl?
I'm good, girl.
Oh, my God. So
oh, my God. I miss you so much.
And you.
All right, you two.
Sorry, people.
Back to radio voice. Back to radio voice.
And hello, people.
You got to read the news in a minute. You can't.
Wait, you mean
like
I can't read it like that?
No,
oh, my gosh.
Really. I love that voice on you.
Thank you.
That's
so
like
fetch.
Really sharp and piercing when you do.
I think. Stop trying to use fetch, Gretchen.
Oh, my gosh. No. You're not going to make it happen.
Hello, Terry. Can you be a bit more serious?
I don't know.
I love it. Terry got involved.
Oh, my gosh,
the best moment of my day. Seriously.
Right. Let's get some news headlines.
Shout Out News on Thursday the 17th of October.
Reading Pride report that they will be coordinating a coalition of liberal, radical and LGBTQ group who are protesting the arrival in the town of a fast food restaurant from America, which makes donations to extremist politicians. A demonstration against the launch of Chick-fil-A chain's first UK restaurant is taking place this Saturday. More information on the protest is at Reading Pride Facebook page and also at the Pride Network's vigorous defence of the action against homophobes who say that closing the restaurant would cost jobs. We'd not cause them to lose their jobs, the actions of the company giving money to organisations who state being homosexual is wrong, and their funding to a charity that funded a preacher to go to a country to assist in the Kill the Gays law might. It will be their actions that cause the consequences of potential job losses, not ours. The finger of blame is firmly with them. We're just highlighting this to those who would like to know. There's no hate from us except of the act of funding hate.
The underground culture magazine Crack reports in its October issue that one of the UK's hottest rapping talents, Slow Tie, has brandished a mock-up of Prime Minister Johnson's severed head, wonderful, at the Mercury Prize Awards as part of his ongoing feud with the British establishment, personified in his track There's Nothing Great About Britain. Slow Tie has earned support from many anti-racist and anti-hate activists for taking on nationalism and xenophobia in his work. The rapper has become something of a gay pin-up following his lively on-stage performances in which he appears in his boxer shorts for much of the time, and he has told the music website NME.com that he has avoided toxic masculinity, which is sometimes associated with other acts. Meanwhile, and on that note, there has been some criticism online of a breakthrough artist from Manchester called H. The 19-year-old rapper is riding high in the charts at the moment with a track called Make It Shake, but some people feel that its message of female objectification is retrogressive and gives the wrong message to young men who may be listening to the single.
Ryland Clark Neil will raise money for the annual Children in Need Appeal, which is held across the BBC's many television and radio stations, by hosting a non-stop 24-hour karaoke party. Mr. Clark Neil, who infiltrates homophobes but delights mainstream audiences with his light-hearted presentation and camp sensibility, has been a hit on every programme he has been involved in. He will have a variety of guests and will play a variety of games, including Karaoke Wheel of Fortune. He hopes to raise many thousands of pounds for the appeal, which has been held regularly since the early days of the BBC in the 1920s. Mr. Clark Neil's ambitious challenge will be broadcast through the day in mid-November on BBC Radio 2 and on the BBC Red Button, as well as online.
The Excelsior Comic Shop in Bristol, one of the city's specialist retailers in Marvel, DC, independent and manga publications, has just finished a successful summer season display of LGBTQ-themed comics in its prestigious shop window. The retailer, which is located just a few doors along from the Gay Men's Lifestyle Store Prowler Bristol on the city's Bond Street, wanted to highlight the fact that there is a strong LGBT narrative in several comic book series. The display included rainbow flags and a showcase of LGBTQ-themed comics and compilations.
Staying with local retailers, the People's Republic of Stokes Croft, which started as a radical ceramics art house and now includes a bookstore and artist studios in its work in the heart of Bristol, has launched a range of pride-themed mugs and teapots. The project is an artist cooperative that has been at the centre of politics and activism in the Stokes Croft area of the city for more than a decade and runs a wide range of services, including its own online talk-based radio station. Its retail shops is a must visit if you're interested in progressive or alternative politics. The Pride range of merchandise is in rainbow colours, but is also partly a protest at the commercialism of the movement in recent years and reminds people Pride started as a riot. This is a variation on the slogan first used by the campaign group Outrage on Pride London events back in the 90s. The range of merchandise is also available online at the website prsc.org.
And BBC Radio 1 reported last night that the government has abandoned plans to require users of pornographic sites online to register their age. The reason behind the dropping of the proposal is said by computer experts to be because the state realised that in the decentralised world of the internet, where sites are based in multiple territories or often bounced around, the enforcement of such a rule would be nearly impossible. The change of position will infuriate anti-pornography campaigners, both on the political right, such as religious groups, but also on the political left, where radical feminists argue that porn always harms women. However, the policy change was broadly welcomed by sexual freedom and fetish campaigners, and by some LGBTQ people, who argued that the proposals would have constituted a grave violation of people's internet freedom and personal liberty.
And finally, Diva magazine, Europe's top title for gay and bi women, marks Black History Month with an essay from the chairperson of UK Black Pride, a network for LGBTQ people of colour. In it, she looks back at the rich heritage of intersectional feminism. That is the tradition within the feminist movement, which recognises that people's identities are complex and have many components. She quotes from the Combahee River Collective, a black feminist organisation of the 70s, which excoriates lesbian separatism as a dead end, which makes enemies of everyone that disagrees with it and fails black women. It is part of the separatist of the lesbian political scene that has been behind some of the most vocal anti-trans activism, so reclaiming the history of a more tolerant feminist tradition is important.
For these news stories and more, you can check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Hans Peregrine and
Terry Starr.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out podcast.
Put yourself in my place.
Was that an invitation? What, you want us to...
No, I'm telling you the name of the song.
I see what you did there, Andy.
I would like to put myself in your place, to
Such
be honest.
Such a
proud.
Would you?
Yeah, your house looks amazing.
His house could be on Cribs.
Literally. Honey, I'd own that.
Yeah. I thought you meant here.
Honey, no. Your house. I want it.
So, anyway, what have you got next? By Elgin's. So that's good. Put yourself in my place. Played some interesting songs tonight, haven't you?
Yes,
Miss Steffi.
I thought it was quite classic, actually.
It is a classic song.
Yeah,
and you should just yeah.
And it's quite
classic and classy as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and the lyrics.
Classic and classy.
The lyrics classy. Are quite meaningful, I thought.
Yeah,
I
didn't.
Oh, look
didn't
at you listening to the lyrics.
I
yeah.
know, right? Well, it was my era, wasn't it? Motown.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I love Motown, though. Mm. All that era, because my mum, obviously, is your era. So she made me, not made me, but isn't that happy?
She made you, she forced you to make Motown.
Of course, she held me down, and no, I'm joking, but like, yeah, no, yeah, no, I love that song.
Anyway, carrying on.
Yes, that's what I was about to ask. I was like, who is next?
Well, it's carrying on the same interview, isn't it? We got to the part where she discovered the spiritual church.
Yeah, and we all know that there's never enough hands on radio, so it's another 17 minutes or something.
There's never enough hands in the universe anyway.
Luckily, it's only 12, so have a listen to this.
And then I found the spiritualist church. Yeah. Then for a few years. The spiritualist church in Bridgewater, very different to the spiritualist church in Liverpool. It was more sort of like a traditional church service in Bridgewater, other than the clairvoyancy and stuff. But when I got to Liverpool, the spiritualist church here, you have to pay to get in, and it's a lot more showy. And I kind of would go there and sit and say the Lord's Prayer, and that was it. And then the sort of years down the line, I started a counselling course, and I got paired with a lady on the first day, and she said to me, you know, I go to this church, it's a Christian church. She said, I don't call myself a Christian, but this is a really good supportive group of people. And if you come with me one Sunday, I'll make you a roast dinner afterwards. So if you don't like it, you never have to go back. And I was like, well, it's a free roast dinner. You're going to turn that down. And I went along, and if you've ever sort of walked into like a steam room and you open that door and the heat just hits you, I got that feeling kind of physically, but it was like love. You could like tangibly feel the love in that room, and you know, straight away people were like, oh hello, you're new, like who are you, like really friendly, saying hello. And I saw like the passion and the just the like outright faith that people had, and I like would see them floored by the Holy Spirit, and I'd sort of look and go, wow, I want some of what that guy's got, thing. I want to feel that. And the more I learned about Jesus, the more I was like, well, all these things that I was told as a child, you know, about the Bible, it's all wrong. Because I always kind of believed Jesus existed, but I wasn't sure he was the Son of God, if you know what I mean. Like, I believed he was a real guy who died, who martyred himself. But, you know, where that sort of sat spiritually was always sort of a bit iffy. But, I just was overwhelmed by the love, and that sort of grabbed me, and I'm still at that exact same church now, 11 years later. And actually my entire life now kind of revolves around the church as well.
Yeah, it's really wonderful to hear that you've had such a positive experience, and I think it's really important for people to hear that, and you know, with what you're saying around the whole sort of that a lot of people have this misconception that there is a lot of negativity within the church with their perception of sexuality and gender expression, because of course there have been many negative experiences, but I think that shouldn't kind of erase the huge amount of positive experiences that people have. And it sounds like you've got sort of a family within the church, and more than just a community.
I do call them my church family. I've got my church family, my Liverpool family, my actual family back in Somerset. But yeah, I mean, we act like a family. We all look out for one another, and it's I know, like, whatever trouble I'm in at any time, there is someone in that church that can help me.
Yeah, Yeah, and I think that's just so important, isn't it? You know, to have a sense of community and sort of, it sounds like real fellowship, and I think that's what a lot of people sort of don't kind of grasp when they hear about faith. And before the interview started, we were talking about people understanding the difference between sort of religion, faith, and extremism, and actually what faith can bring to people's lives is often, you know, a very positive thing.
It's given me hope. That's what faith is for me. It's hope. Hope, you know, that I'm being looked after, that I'm, and it's that feeling of being loved and accepted for who you are. And that's what I get from church that I never really had before.
So one thing I wanted to sort of ask you is if there was anything you could sort of say to other people that may be listening in regards to accessing, you know, the church or speaking to people within the church about their sexuality. You know, what sort, is there any sort of advice or anything you could say to them, do you think?
Definitely. There's actually really good online resources if you're looking for a church. So I spent a week back in Somerset last summer, and I wanted to go to a Sunday service, and I looked at my local church on the local church's website, which was St. Francis in Bridgewater, and you know, couldn't really get much information there. But there's a network of churches called the Inclusive Church, so I went on their website, and they sort of pointed me towards St. John's in Bridgewater.
Sure.
And so that's where I went on that Sunday. And now every time I'm in Bridgewater, I go back to that church because the Inclusive Church Network was actually set up to provide resources for churches to make them more LGBT friendly.
Yeah.
But they've also now spread to helping people become more disability friendly and helping people in recovery. So they've opened it up, but initially it was started. So basically, if you I think you sort of subscribe to the Inclusive Church Network, and they provide you with the resources, but they also give you, you know, that logo that you could put on your website or, you know, outside the church somewhere, so people can see that Inclusive Church rainbow logo and know that that's a safe place that they'll be welcomed and accepted.
Oh, that's fantastic. It's just so wonderful to hear that you've had such a positive experience, and coming out in general can be such a difficult thing for anybody, you know, and you've had sort of quite different reactions from your loved ones. But then to have such a positive reaction from the church, you know, I think will give people hope and maybe a different sort of insight into faith and into the church in general. And it's so good to have a well-rounded view, which can only really kind of come from listening to people's experiences.
There's also, I mean, I'm quite lucky living in Liverpool. It's a really welcoming and inclusive city, which has made me fall in love with it anyway. But our bishop at the moment, Bishop Paul Bayes, his first sort of inaugural speech, one of the things he said he wanted to tackle was homophobia in the church. He's actually marched with Christians at Pride every year for the last few years. He's a patron of Pride as well.
Incredible.
So he's really all for the inclusivity of the church and welcoming everyone as a brother and sister. But also the other thing we've got here, or the other thing that started here in Liverpool, is a network called Open Table. And that is a Christian Eucharist usually, or a meeting specifically for LGBTQIA plus people. That started, I was sort of one of the lucky ones. It was a couple friends of mine, Warren and Kieran, that set that up at a church called St. Bride's here in Liverpool. And it started off, there were like, I think, 8 of us that would just have a little Eucharist, like say a few words and sit and, you know, pass the wine and bread around. And since then it's grown and grown and grown. And I think now, in Liverpool alone, there's about 80 of us.
Mm.
So not everyone meets every month, but, on the books, if you know what I mean, there's about 80 people in Liverpool, and there are actually now 19 open tables up and down the country.
Wow.
And it all started here in Liverpool, by my friends. So I'm really proud of that.
Yeah. Well, that's a massive thing, a massive achievement, and such an important thing to be happening, and a supportive service for people who need it.
Yeah. And actually, Paul Bayes, again, being the amazing bishop that he is, he actually took Open Table to the General Synod last year, sort of opened it up to those that don't know. The General Synod is like the big meeting among the high people in church, and that's where they sort of bring down guidelines and stuff like that for Church of England churches. So he took Open Table along and sort of preached on how we need to be inclusive. You know, we can't say that we love everyone and then exclude the whole sector of society.
So true. I'm aware that our conversation has been a wonderful one, but has also...
Are we waffling on a bit?
Oh, never waffling. It's such an important message, And I think that whole, you know, thing with the inclusivity... you know, without repeating myself, is something that people really need to know is available for them. And I think one thing I sort of would like to say is that if people are having, for whatever reason, a negative experience within any faith or within any church type setting or religious building, I suppose, then there are other places they can go that will offer them more support and be more inclusive. It's not, you know, it's... If you have one negative experience, I guess what I'm trying to say is it doesn't need to define your entire kind of experience of anything, you know. Yeah, and that's not just in regards to faith.
I think also the thing with Christianity is, you know, it's a personal relationship with Jesus, and the church is just a building.
Yeah.
It's, you know, how you feel in your heart.
Of course.
With your faith. Your faith is your own, and your journey with God is your own. And so there are still, you know, a few dinosaurs about, but I think generally, like, people are becoming a lot more accepting. And, you know, God is love. And if God is love, then why would you hate anybody?
And love is love.
Yeah. God is love, and love is love, and yeah. Love and peace to everybody.
Well, thank you. What a lovely way to end. Thank you so much for talking to me tonight. It's been fantastic to listen about your journey and to have kind of a different sort of perspective, you know, in all ways. And it would be great to catch up with you maybe in a couple of months and just sort of, you know, to carry on the conversation.
Okay, yeah, because I could waffle on a lot more.
Well, thank you, and I shall speak to you soon.
Excellent.
Bye for now.
Shout out. LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Just like us, for LGBT young people.
Hello, Sarah.
Hey, James.
Also, we are joined this month by Malik. Hey, Malik.
Hi.
Very exciting to have another co-host. What have we all been up to lately? How are we all doing?
I'm doing great. This is very exciting that we've got a co-host, but it's also very stressful.
I'm a little bit scared, but hopefully it'll all go fine.
It's going to be great.
What are we talking about this month?
So this month we're going to be talking about Black History Month because it's October. Yeah, so this is just PSA, brief acknowledgement, that me and James especially know that we're not like people of colour, and we're not like trying to be experts on this topic and kind of lecture people, but we wanted this to be like a great chance to kind of learn more, educate ourselves on Black history and like the experiences that people of colour go through, especially LGBT people of colour.
Sure. So, Sarah, you're going to talk a bit about the origins of Black History Month.
Yep, I was. So, the origins of Black History Month, basically, it was first celebrated in the UK in 1987, but we were like researching, and its origins date back to the USA in the 1920s. And I found out that actually originally started as just the Black History Week, which was in the second week of February. And like the thought process behind this week has never really been kind of like recorded or dated, but scholars kind of acknowledge that the main two reasons that like Black people came up with this was recognition and importance of like acknowledging Black history. And it was first like the Black History Month itself as a month-long event was first proposed by Black educators and students at Kent State University in February 1969. And then 6 years later, it was being celebrated all across the country in kind of educational institutions and like centres of Black culture and community centres. And then today, Black History Month takes place in February in the US and in October in Europe. So yeah.
You're listening to Just Like Us, the monthly show for LGBT young people.
So one of the main kind of reasons that we have Black History Month is to celebrate and discuss Black historical figures. And we wanted to talk about LGBT plus Black historical figures and their contributions to the LGBT plus community and the community of people of colour all around the world. So the first person that we wanted to discuss and learn about was Marsha P. Johnson, who is a Black trans woman and drag queen who was kind of credited with spearheading the LGBT plus rights movement in the USA and was credited with throwing the first brick at Stonewall, which is really cool. And I think she got sidelined a lot, and history has a history of being whitewashed and people of colour aren't always allowed their time to shine. But in recent years, she's been recognised, and she was just a really cool person. And a fun fact is that the P in her name stands for Pay It No Mind, which was a response to people asking her about her gender expression.
I was going to say, that's my favourite really cool Marsha P. Johnson fact. And I feel like it sums up like her attitude towards it as well, in terms of like it's very much her identity and her... Yeah, her relationship with her identity was the most important thing, rather than it being a performance for other people, which was great.
I actually got to go to Stonewall recently, like the Stonewall Inn in New York.
Yeah, you said,
Bit of an LGBT flex. But no, it was really cool. I was going to talk a bit about Bayard Rustin, who was an American leader in social movements for civil rights, socialism, and gay rights, and was also Black. So he's kind of like known for a speech that he gave while New York State was in the process of passing the Gay Rights Bill in 1986, which banned discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation in housing, employment, and public accommodations. So it's obviously very important. And he said that just as Black people had been during the times of segregation, LGBT plus people were, quote, the new barometer for social change. Basically, like, we can tell how progressive a society is by the way they treat LGBT plus people, which is a really interesting thought. And like, he was noted as being like a groundbreaking out gay man. I mean, he once said, "I was not involved in the struggle for gay rights as a youth. I did not come out of the closet voluntarily. Circumstances forced me out. While I have no problem being publicly identified as a homosexual, it would be dishonest of me to present myself as one who was in the forefront of the struggle for gay rights," which is interesting. And it's like demonstrates a real self-awareness of like his place in the movement. But he's undeniably like an important figure. Yeah,
Definitely. Yeah. I think it's also interesting because he said that he felt very connected to kind of like the civil rights movement and like the kind of Black side of his identity, but kind of a bit more disconnected from the community when it came to the LGBT rights movement. So because he'd had to focus on one more than the other, I think.
Yeah, I think it can often be a struggle for LGBT plus people of colour to kind of grapple with those two sometimes quite opposing identities. And it's like, am I gay enough? Am I Black enough? Am I enough? And it would be nice for people to be able to just be themselves and still be considered as much a part of both of those communities instead of having to choose them.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You're listening to Just Like Us, the monthly show for LGBT young people.
So as we know in history, it's been a lot more difficult for non-white people to exist in white spaces, but that also carries over to today. And I think a lot of people still struggle with their identities as non-white LGBT plus people. And there have been some recent studies by Stonewall, which have found that 3 in 5, so 61% of Black LGBT plus people report experiencing discrimination or poor treatment within their local LGBT plus network because of their ethnicity. And I think I can relate to that. I've noticed that when I've been in environments that are kind of for LGBT plus people, I've noticed that my white friends get preferential treatment in some cases.
Yeah, I feel like there is a tendency sometimes, especially among white LGBT people, that we have a pass to do other things wrong because, like, we're oppressed too, so it's like, it's fine. You know, like, you get, like, a lot of gay men being sexist and racist, and they think that it's, like, cute and fun because they're like, oh, no, like, I get it. I get what it's like to be a woman because I've had people be homophobic, but obviously that's not.
Can I say, like, as a like as a woman as well, and it's not exactly the same, but as in that I've had a lot of things where, like, gay men feel like they can maybe, like, invade your personal space a bit more, and, like, that kind of thing, it's that kind of overstepping of boundaries, which I think can be, like, very, like, there's kind of a lack of awareness sometimes, I think, in the within the LGBT community, especially, like, among, like, the white cis people, where it can be quite like stressful.
This is a direct calling out of me talking over Sarah on the podcast.
Definitely.
Just, I just feel like some gay men, you know.
You know.
You're listening to Just Like Us, the monthly show for LGBT young people.
So, if you've enjoyed this episode and you've liked hearing about some of the important black figures in history that are also LGBT+, you should definitely check out the LGBT Foundation on Twitter at LGBTFDN, who are highlighting a different LGBT+ person of colour every day in this month of October.
Great, that's it from us this month. We'll see you again next month. Maybe with a new co-host. Who knows?
Ooh.
The world is our oyster. That sounds like I'm kicking Malik out aggressively.
Yeah, a new one because he's not good enough.
I thought you were just kicking me out. I thought it was Malik is the new co-host. I was like, I'll take it. It's fine. Right. Okay. It's been really fun. Okay.
Right. See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to Just Like Us, the monthly show for LGBT young people. The music was by Twisterium. We come into schools too. Young people, teachers and parents can find us at www.justlikeus.org.
For more information about Shoutout Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
There you go.
That was interesting, wasn't it?
It was just like us, show you.
Talk about Black History Month. I mean, I don't really believe in that as a black queer person. I don't really believe that a month is enough. Black history should be taught in our education, considering the fact that we had the whole history of bringing black people over here, integrating them to our society. So really and truly, in my perspective, you should teach about their culture, about the culture of every single person here, but that's just not done. So Black History Month to me is a bit bogus, but we still utilize it because it's still important for people to recognize the fact that we are here and exist. But we don't just exist because of apartheid, or we didn't just exist because of the civil rights movement. We existed way before that, and because of slavery, we were people before that. So I don't know why in Black History Month that's mainly concentrated on.
But if it's not taught in schools and we didn't have Black History Month, there'd be nothing to keep reminding us that things are wrong, surely.
But this is what I'm saying. Why is it that you only teach Black History in Black History Month? Should be taught throughout the school year. It should be a segment of the school
I don't
year.
Know. I couldn't ask. I don't know
so
the
So when
curriculum,
I was in school, it was taught for, like, during the Black History Month, and I was taught about apartheid, civil rights movement and slavery. Now, why am I only taught about my oppression? Why am I not taught about when in Africa they had abacuses where they were mathematicians, scientists, roads, had their own food, cuisines. They had the richest person in history was a black man. And the fact that I didn't know that until I was 20 years old isn't good enough.
The only thing I was ever taught at school, and there is a slight age gap, about 10 years, I think. You know,
I'm the younger one.
She'll pick up
everyone's information. I'm the younger one.
Yeah, that's all we need to know. Lara is everybody.
Lara,
if you're not aware, Lara is the youngest one.
I'm
here.
The fountain of youth.
When I was at school, the only thing we were taught about in regards to Black history was slavery.
Exactly.
And we were taught it via the medium of Roots. And that was the only literally information that we
which
got,
which is insane, because our history does not pertain to just slavery.
No, of course
there's
it doesn't.
Slavery, English people were enslaved by by I think the Arabs.
Vikings came over and did a lot of damage.
So many people have been enslaved. It's not the only slavery. I'm not going to say that the transatlantic slave trade wasn't horrific, because people are still suffering from it today. That's evident. We should still talk about it, but it wasn't the only slavery in history, and we owe it to more black, well, to black people, to educate them on more than just that.
Yeah, and also I think that really history as a subject within schools needs to be turned over and really looked at.
Mine was so boring.
Mine was horrendous.
Literally, RS, history, all of it needs to be rethought, I feel like, because, again...
I sense Lara's going to become a school teacher.
Absolutely not.
perhaps in
another
life.
No, I can't fix that system. I'm sorry. I'm trying to fix universities. I ain't even fixing like, schools. I can't be doing that.
Of course, we're heading towards an even older festival coming up very soon as well, which is Halloween.
Oh, we are indeed.
So did you ever go trick-or-treating, or do you still go trick-or-treating?
My black-ass mum said no, because it's obviously she's Catholic and it's a devil's birthday, all that stuff, but...
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a thing. Like, they believe it's...
Or Hallows Eve, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, Hallows Eve.
But for me, yeah, I love Halloween because I get to dress up and do whatever I want.
Like every
big gay festival in America, especially, isn't it?
I liked it because...
Well, it's become quite a lot over
sweet,
here, hasn't it?
Sweets were the one until like I realised they actually like do rot your teeth.
I believe is it if you're willing to take part, you put a pumpkin outside.
Yeah, that's how it was when I was a child.
When I was a little kid, we weren't allowed to go trick-or-treating anywhere apart from in our drive, and there were only three houses in the drive, of which we lived in one, so there was us and the two neighbours.
That is amazing.
We always had sweets as preparation. We're like, my mum wasn't that too much of a Scrooge.
Andy started trick-or-treating at 7 and finished at 4 minutes past.
Hey, you know we're on air, aren't we? On the 31st, are we going to put a pumpkin outside the studio?
Absolutely not.
No?
I don't want any kids around here. I'm joking. Yeah, we can. Like, it'll be cute.
We're inside a locked building, so it doesn't quite work.
We can throw it out the window. Like, take it.
Throw it out the window. Now we have windows.
Yes. See, I'm here with the ideas.
I'll sing the Hocus Pocus songs out the window, which will scare the children.
I love that film.
Me too.
It's kind of freaky.
They wanted to do a sequel, and it's Disney that own it, isn't it? They wouldn't let them. They said no. Because the first one was a complete flop, but it became a cult classic.
Well, all three of the main cast members have said no, and then Kathy Najimy said yes.
All of them said yes.
Yeah, but it went like back and forth. Now they're all saying yes, and Disney's saying no.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think they'll have the same cat? If they don't, I'm not watching it.
Salem, isn't it?
Salem.
Oh, I do love Salem.
Yeah, he's in one of the other ones as well, isn't
Sabrina.
He? Sabrina, I'm looking forward to a new series of that, so... anyway, that's it for this week, I'm afraid. Next week, we look at drug and alcohol addiction.
For the podcast versions of the show, go to shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shoutout is recorded at BCFM Studios, Bristol. Your presenters this week were Andy Sheldon and Laura Lalemi.
Woo woo!
Sorry.
It's XG producer Steffi Barnett, news editor Terry Starr. Until next time, everyone, say bye.
Bye.
Bye bye.
She stole my line.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.